Ohio Podcast, live through Twitch, or not if you're not listening to it on Twitch. This is Vance, and with me this week is Jimbo.
Hey, how's everyone going?
We've actually invaded Jimbo's Twitch channel as a way to produce this. Bit of experimental. Hopefully it works. Let us know if you like it. We just thought we'd get together and discuss a bit of new magic, Highlander, what's going on, etc. So yeah, here we are.
It has been a while since the last podcast episode, hasn't it? I've been well, aside from my inability to say the word podcast. Out playing Magic, judging Magic, you know, competitive players back. There's like a Pro Tour qualifier in Sydney in November that I'm hoping to be attending. So I'm glad to be out and about, you know, playing some cardboard and Highlander's looking sweet right now. I've got to say, as a fan of Mana Drain, glad that I had might have had a finger in the decision on that one. But, you know, it's...
Yeah, we let the committee contain you and Michael. Suddenly Highlander 0.
Yeah, I don't know how that happened. No one could possibly have seen that coming. And what about yourself? Fats, how have you been?
Been a bit sick on and off, but I'm okay at the moment.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that and glad to hear that.
Enjoying life post committee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what's that like? Not having to turn up to meetings every couple of weeks and sit there for hours discussing the pros and cons of Enlightened Tutor.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's good, although the annoying part is I just do it for free on the Discord anyway.
True.
So, you know, and I still have been having some chats with, well, yourself and some other members of the committee because I'm only recently off it, but it was definitely interesting watching the points announcement without knowing everything that was in it.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
You know, I had some ideas because I knew what we discussed when I was on it, which was only like, I think the end of July, right? So I hadn't been off it for that long, but
yeah, it's interesting. It was a relatively long season for points updates, but it was broken up by the committee change of members. You know, we had some announcements and a lot of discussions that weren't actually points related. So that was kind of cool.
Yeah, and the no reserve list change.
Mm-hmm, that too, yeah. But what are we here for today?
So what we're here for today is just to discuss some of the new cards in Dominaria United. That we think might be powerful or fun or interesting in Highlander. So Jimbo and I have put together a list of 7 cards each. We don't know what is on the other person's list. These aren't, I can't speak for Jimbo. Mine aren't necessarily the cards that 100% certain will be the 7 most powerful, although I think they'll all make an impact.
Mm-hmm. I could say the same about mine, yeah.
Yeah. Like, to some extent, they're just cards I'm like, wow, this is cool.
Mm-hmm.
Small amount of cheating on a couple of them where there's 1.5 groups of cards, but, you know.
I've actually got 2 of those on my list as well, yeah.
Yeah. I suspect one of those groups is the same group.
Okay, well, I'll be happy to find out. Do you want to dive into what we reckon?
Yeah. So, what's your number 7?
I haven't actually put them in any specific order, although this one's probably fine to sit at number 7. So let's put this one up on the screen. Hope the button works. Activated Sleeper. 2 and a black creature, Phyrexian Shapeshifter, Flash 00. You may have it enter as a copy of any creature card in a graveyard that was put there from the battlefield this turn, except it's a Phyrexian in addition to its other types.
So it's like a Phyrexian Protean Hulk.
Exactly right. Yeah. So it's a body double-esque card, except it costs 3 instead of 5. And I think the only times I've ever seen body double played in this format, the converted mana cost was a key factor in the card.
I would imagine, yeah. You're not doing a lot of fair body doubles.
That's true. I've been told that it doesn't actually make a huge impact in the flash deck. It doesn't enable any extra kills that you couldn't do before. But maybe it'll let you get some extra protection on your kill. Perhaps you can, you know, the extra two mana is the right size for a Grand Abolisher, for example.
Yeah, yep. Let's just sneak in something nice. But I think the card's cool. The art is a bit horrifying, but, you know, I guess...
Certainly suits the theme, that's for sure.
Cool. My first one, where we get to see how well this technology for bringing up the images works. If you listen to the podcast, we are bringing up images. We're going to try and put the video somewhere. That somewhere is a bit TBA, and it'll be in the podcast notes. But yeah, my first one is Leyline Binding.
I actually really like this card. I think this card is very powerful and likely to see play in anyone. You know, anyone playing three colors is going to probably not want this, but anyone playing four colors, this card becomes really good.
Yeah, so this is one of those cards where it's easy to look at and see a really bad card, and easy to look at and see a really good card. And I think it's just a quite good card. Mm-hmm. So on turn two, if you're playing a deck that's dedicated to wanting to play Domain, on turn two, you should have four land types available.
Yep.
Quite frequently. Not 100% of the time. Like sometimes you've got to adjust to the colors of the spells in your hand and you've got to fiddle around or you've, you know, just drawn awkward lands or whatever.
Yeah, sometimes you don't draw a fetch land and you're at the mercy of what colors are actually written on the cards in front of you.
But if we assume that in a deck that chooses to play this, it's usually going to cost two.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty good card.
If
you're playing it on turn two, and on turn three or four, getting this to cost one is not difficult. And at one, it's pretty good, right?
I'd go further than that. I would say at one, it's quite absurd.
Yeah, look, it's not quite as good as in Days of Yore, where main deckable disenchant effects were few and far between, unless you go far enough back that people were playing like the one that you could, it was a 3-mana disenchant that you cast for 6 and draw 2 cards as well.
Dismantling Blow?
Yeah, Dismantling Blow. Back from when everyone's cards were terrible.
Yeah.
And possibly before Highlander had sideboards. But, you know, you've got Besiegers and so on at the moment, which
true,
pretty effectively.
That's
very main deckable. But in a more... So I think it's not quite as good in controlling heavy colored decks, but in an aggressive 4 or 5 color deck that might want to play Tribal Flames, I can't imagine what deck I'm thinking of. Even if you only get to remove their creature for 2 turns, it's usually pretty good.
And unlike cards like Journey to Nowhere or Path to Exile, Swords to Plowshares, it's not limited to creatures. This can hit Planeswalkers, this can hit an opposing Moat, if we're talking about back in the day when everyone's cards sucked. It's a catch-all. You know, it can't hit a Dryad Arbor, that's what I'll tell you.
It is, other than everyone's favorite Dryad Arbor, it's incredibly flexible. It's not risk-free, but you're getting a lot of flexibility for the risk you take. So, yeah, I like it.
Leyline Binding was actually on my list as well. I'm hoping that my copy arrives before Wednesday because I want to play it in the local event on Wednesday. I've got a 4-color control deck that this will fit into quite well, I think.
Nice. But what's the next one you want to talk about?
The next one on my list is, this is going to be great reading this one out for the podcast, Dahada, Binder of Wills. So this is a Planeswalker. It costs one red, white, black, legendary Planeswalker, Dahada. 5 loyalty, +2, up to one target legendary creature gains vigilance and lifelink and indestructible until your next turn. -3, reveal your top 4 cards, put any number of legendary cards from among them in your hand, the rest in your graveyard, create a treasure token for each card put into your graveyard this way. And minus 11, win the game, probably. You gain control of all the stuff, and they gain haste, and you kill people. It can be your commander also.
Very relevant for us. It's actually a good point. We didn't fully read out that last one for the podcast. I am out of practice. But Dahada's a cool card. Like,
yeah. The minus 3 is more flexible every time you read it. So you flip over 4, you can put any number of legendary cards from among them. That means you can leave legends in there if you want to just create more treasures. You can play this ticket down. It pays for itself immediately. It's legendary cards, so if you take, say, a Baseju, you know, if you flip over a Baseju, you can take that, and, you know, it's, and then the plus 2 will almost certainly protect the Dahada, giving a creature vigilance and indestructible. That's going to block.
Yeah, it's going to block, and it's going to block good. Yeah, I had read that as legendary creature, that's for sure. And Dahada's a cool, interesting old character to bring back.
Yeah, so when you search up Dahada, you actually find Geodrone Dahada from some other recent set.
Modern Masters 2?
Yeah, Modern Horizons 2, yeah.
Modern Horizons, sorry, yeah.
Yeah, which was the Grixis Planeswalker that did things with corruption counters. I don't know whether that's the same character or not.
So, I'm pretty sure it is, and she's a character from, I can't remember which one, but one of the old Legends era magic books.
Okay. Right.
So she, and I might be wrong on this, but I think she's the one who cursed the Blackblade that Dakon Blackblade has and turned Solkanar into whatever the hell Solkanar is.
Sure. Yeah, I think Dahada's going to be a very scary card out of any legendary focused aggro decks. There's one in Melbourne, at least. I've heard of players playing one in Canberra as well. I don't know how similar the lists are. And along with Dahada, I just wanted to staple on a mention of Plaza of Heroes. It's a land that also really cares about legendary permanents.
Yeah.
Taps for colorless, taps for any color to cast legendary spells, taps for any color among legendaries you control, and you can also pay 3, tap, exile it to give a legendary hexproof and indestructible until end of turn. So, just another role player in these legendary decks, you know. It taps for any color to cast your legends. Once you've got legends, it taps for any color to cast your other stuff, and then it protects your legends. What more could you want?
That is cool.
What about you, Vance? What's your next offering for us?
So my next is a group of cards. So the example one we can bring up on screen is it Runevelt Horde Master?
Yep.
So this something you, very like you, that.
You're talking about the group of lords. Yeah, the cycle of lords that give plus 1 and some other cool effect for a tribe. There's goblins, merfolks, elves, clerics, and soldiers.
Clerics and soldiers. 3 of them are excellent. One of them's okay. The cleric one, I think, is bad. So Runevelt Horde Master is 2 mana for a 1/1, which I think is true of all of them. Other goblins you control get +1/+1. Again, I think that's universal. And then they've all got some cool ability. So whenever Runevelt Horde Master or another goblin you control dies, exile the top card of your library. If it's a goblin creature card, you may cast that card until the end of your next turn.
So yeah.
This is really cool. There's a couple of kind of obvious applications. The first one is just, if your opponent kills your creatures, you get to try and get new ones that you can cast on your next turn or, you know, to rebuild your army. That's level 0. That's great.
Including itself as well.
Yeah, that's right. So, like, in a heavy goblin deck, if they're killing your goblins one at a time, you might miss. But if they kill, you know, 2 or 3 goblins with some wrath effect or a pyroclasm, pretty good odds you get to hit at least once or twice.
Yeah, actually really good against board wipes. Yeah, you're right.
But the other thing is that the only deck that likes killing goblins more than whatever your opponent is playing is goblins itself. this is really great with any of those goblins. We sack, give something +1/+1, or I've just forgotten the name of the one, which is sack a goblin, get a mana.
Skirk Prospector,
yep. This and Skirk Prospector I don't know what the combo is, but I'm sure that like Frank and Mulch or whoever are trying to work out, you know, how to get you to point some problem or other.
Yeah, you don't know what the combo is, but someone out there somewhere does. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Go on.
I was going to say, the Merfolk Lord, I think, is also really good. The Merfolk Lord lets you sack Merfolk to counter spells or force spike them or whatever it is.
Yeah, again, 2 mana, 1/1, Lord, sacrifice a Merfolk, counter a non-creature unless they pay one. So I guess that's like a curse catcher almost.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, it makes everything a curse catcher. The elf one, I think the elf one is kind of a bad glimpse of nature.
Yes, that's a great description for it. 2 mana, 1/1. It's green-green, though, not one and a green. Oh. Your other elves get +1, and whenever you cast an elf, you can pay green to draw a card.
Again, there are combo applications here, but I think it's... I think they tried to make sure there weren't too many.
Yeah,
the Soldier Lord just pumps and then pumps some more.
Mm-hmm. Pumps them when it's in play and you can exile it from your graveyard to pump them again.
Yeah. Yeah. And the Cleric one, I think it's got some kind of reanimation effect, but I don't think it's...
I think the Cleric one has exactly one application. It lets you sacrifice a Cleric to Tutifrey black creature. The Cleric that comes to my mind is Shadowborn Apostle. You can figure out the rest of your deck from two cards. It probably involves another Shadowborn Apostle and another Shadowborn Apostle.
and maybe Gristlebrand.
It could. There's really no way of knowing when it comes to these cleric decks, you know?
Could be almost anything. Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. Next on my list, I have Balmor Battlemage Captain. This is a blue-red legendary creature bird wizard. It's a 1/3. It's got flying. And whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, creatures you control get +1/+0 and gain trample until end of turn.
Okay, it turns out I do know what that card does. I just had no idea what its name was.
You know, I couldn't have told you yesterday. I couldn't have told you 3 hours ago, honestly. I knew that the card existed. I didn't know the name of it. I went to a set spoiler to find its name.
Yeah, it was on my shortlist, but just as a picture, so I never internalized its name.
So what I'm thinking with this, you know, best friend of this would have to be Young Pyromancer. When you cast instant or sorcery, you get a token. When you cast instant or sorcery, creatures you control get +1/+0 and trample till end of turn. I think the trample is very relevant as well.
Yeah. So there's the various prowess decks, so Prowess and Dr. Seuss, obviously love this card.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because they're already built around, you know, casting spells to pump their creatures up, and this just means every spell pumps things up twice, and this pumps up everything. And there was another similar card from possibly previous Dominaria that just pumped wizards, I think, and that was very good.
Yeah, I've got a vague memory of that guy in Limited.
Card's cool.
It's got flying as well on its own, so it's got evasion and evasion for itself.
Yeah.
I also wanted to pair it with another blue-red tempo prowessy sort of card, Battlewing Mystic, which attempts to do a... what's that card? Bedlam Reveler impression? It just does it poorly.
I thought you were going to say Muldrifter.
Okay. That's probably also fair. Battlewing Mystic, 1 and a blue, 2/1 flyer. It's got kicker red. If you kick it, when it enters, you discard your hand and draw 2. Obviously not going to be tearing the format apart, but it could see play, maybe alongside Balmor Battlemage Captain, maybe not.
I think the card's cool.
Yeah.
That's
exactly where I got 2 on it as well.
You're not going to want to pay the kicker all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And a 2/1 flyer for 2 is not. But it's okay. Yep. But the times where you do pay the kicker, it's going to be so good.
Even just discarding an extra land that you flooded out with on turn 10 or whatever, you know. That said, Bedlam Reveler probably does the job better, but, you know, this is Highlander. You can't play four Bedlam Revelers. You're going to have to play a bad one at some point.
Yeah, exactly.
What have you got for us now? I like this taking turns.
Yeah, it's really good. So next one I've got is Myria, Scholar of Antiquity.
Okay, yep. So Myria was on my list as well, actually. It almost didn't make the cut, but I figured it was too cool and there was no way that I could cut it. Do you want to read it out for us?
Yeah, sure. So Myria is one red and green for a 3/3 legendary creature elf artificer. Tap an untapped artifact you control, non-token, sorry. Tap an untapped non-token artifact you control, add a green.
Non-token, okay. I didn't recognize
tap
that.
Tap two untapped non-token artifacts you control, exile the top card of your library, you can play it this turn. Yeah, non-token makes her a fair amount worse. I think one of the interesting things about this set, and I'll probably be proven wrong in 3 months when you've pointed, you know, four different cards from the set, but one of the interesting things about this set is they appear to have been a little bit cautious with a lot of their wording, in a way that they extremely weren't in, say, Theros, why not just make escape work forever?
Yep, for sure.
So Myria does do cool stuff. If you're in some kind of red-green artifact deck, like generating free mana and getting extra spells, those are things you want to do. Those are both great things. So I think she's, I don't know what the deck you want to play her in, but, you know, I think it's kind of an exciting card to experiment with.
It's definitely, it definitely gives We Have Urza at Home vibes, you know. It's instead of tapping any artifact for blue and paying five to exile your top card, it's any artifact for green and two artifacts to exile your top card.
Yeah.
There has been...
Last 100% time, that's Gollum, sadly.
Very true. Last local I played in Melbourne, actually, I played against a Jeskai Bomberman deck. Playing a whole bunch of weird legendaries from recent sets. Cards like Emery, which is, I guess, is not so recent. Yeah. But there was some other one that let you bounce lands to reanimate artifacts. I couldn't even tell you all of the words on it.
Yeah. I know the card.
And
type it in chat soon, no doubt.
And I think Myria could fit in that deck. It's off color right now, but, you know, there's nothing forcing this deck to be Jeskai. It could be five color. It could be rug. Yep. It really could be anything.
Yep. Yeah.
Temeshi.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Sweet card. I really like it. I'm excited to see whether it does anything. And I'm sure that it will. It's just got a lot of good words on it. It's also a reasonably sized body, you know. As you said, they have fun policed it in a lot of ways by, you know, adding non-token and that sort of thing. But it's a 3/3, you know. 5 years ago, this would have been a 2/2, maybe a 1/2.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the green in the card that's standing out.
If they printed this in 2010, it would have been like a 0/1 that had some horrible drawback as well.
Yeah, only once per turn.
Yeah, that's right. Cool. What's your next one you want to talk about?
Well, let's stick with the red green legendary creatures, but I want to add a touch of a black mana symbol to it.
Talk about
Soul of Windgrace, one black red green legendary creature cat avatar. It's a 5/4. When it enters the battlefield or attacks, you can put a land card from a graveyard onto the battlefield tapped under your control. And then it's got green, discard a land, gain 3 life. 1 and a red, discard a land, draw a card. 2 and a red, discard a land. Soul of Windgrace gains indestructible until end of turn, tap it.
I think that last one's 2 and a black.
2 and a black, my mistake. So this is a lot of words. And there's a lot to take in.
It's a lot of good words.
Yeah. So the enter the battlefield and attack trigger... It's a land card from a graveyard. It's not your graveyard. It's any graveyard.
Oh, or attacks. Wow. Yeah, okay.
It's ETB and attacks, similar to Titans of yore. And it doesn't target. So it's not weak to things like tapping a relic of Progenitus, cling to dust, scavenging ooze, and also because it doesn't target, you can put the ability on the stack and then activate any of the other abilities of Soul of Wind Grace to put a land in the graveyard.
Yeah, exactly.
So you could be like, turn five, play this guy, trigger, discard, pay green, discard a land, gain three life, put that land into play.
Yeah, look, I had this in a pre-release pool that I played with Brewer, and I thought it was great, and I did not read the words or attacks at any point during that game. And it was still just a house.
Yeah.
Limited, obviously, very different to Highlander, but card's cool.
And this second ability, one and a red, discard a land card, draw a card, that just has Life from the Loam written all over it.
Yeah, it sure does.
You can discard a land to draw Life from the Loam, cast Loam, pick up three lands. Oof.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's great. And it means that they can't ever get your Loam, because you might be able to just get it back and draw a card.
Very true. Yeah, cards like Forgotten Cave and Tranquil Thicket, really good at like protecting your Loam in that way by having instant speed draw. Yeah. And they're all cycling lands with this guy in play. Really cool card.
Yeah.
I don't want to play against it.
Who doesn't love Jund?
Yeah, I mean, that's popular colours for these, for Loam, for these Lands Matters decks between Ren and Six Titania, Ramunap Excavator. You know, if you're going to play against a Dark Depths, it's likely to be out of Jund.
Yeah. Now, a card that's not on my list, but talking about that, I want to talk about. Do you want to bring up Greensleeves?
Yeah, that was actually on my honourable mentions list.
It was also on my honourable mentions
list. Greensleeves Maru Sorcerer. Three green, legendary creature, elemental, star power. Protection from planeswalkers and from wizards. Power and toughness equal to the number of lands you control, and it has landfall, get a 3/3 badger.
So, a couple of things. The obvious comparisons to Tanya, and I think it is a little worse. But a couple of things that I think are worth commenting on. One, Greensleeves herself is much bigger and much harder to kill than Titania. Mm-hmm. When you play her, she's usually going to be a 5/5 or more.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite easy to get multiple triggers a turn out of her.
Yep.
If you've got some other method of bringing lands back in particular, just, you know, play fetch, cracker fetch, and you've got six power and toughness worth of stuff rather than a 5/3 out of...
Yeah.
Titania.
That's very true.
Doesn't get you a land back initially, which is a big drawback. But one of the things I find funniest about this, given that this card is Amaro, is that it has protection from wizards. And I want to know if there's something to read into that. I know it's from an older story, but still, Maro having protection from wizards is funny.
There's actually another Maro in this set as well. It's
There is. A territorial Maro?
Yeah, really good in the domain decks in Limited, but not so much in Highlander.
Not so much.
The thing that stands out to me with this card is I've been playing Titania a lot recently, and when you draw it and you don't have a fetch land, it sucks. But Greensleeves, if you play it and you just play a Savannah, you get a 3/3. You play a forest, you get a 3/3. You know, if you draw a land and it's not a fetch land, you still get a creature. And if it is a fetch land, you get two, which is probably on par, maybe better than getting the 5/3. Depends on how the game's going, but...
Yeah, for sure. So, speaking of domain, my next card, to the surprise of, I'm sure, nobody, is Nashoba Brawler.
Okay, I didn't have this one on my... even on my shortlist, but... That's because it's definitely not a Jimbo card. It is definitely, however, a Vance card.
It is.
Nashoba Brawler. Have a read of this one for me.
So Nashoba Brawler is a green and one for a cat warrior. It's a star 3. It's got trample, and the star is domain. So Nashoba Brawler's power is equal to the number of basic land types among lands you control. So it's trivial to attack on turn 3 with this as a 4/3 with trample. It's not difficult to attack with it as a 5/3.
Mm-hmm.
2 mana 5/3 with trample is a ridiculous aggressive card.
Yeah. But yeah.
Completely insane.
It gives me vibes of, there's a red-green one that's power toughness equal to your domain, and also you can loot.
Yes. It's not as good as that. That card is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yes, it's quite similar to that.
Territorial carving. Territorial
carving. The advantage of having a chat. Normally when we're doing this, Jibble and I are like, oh, shit. And then I just cut that out of the podcast.
Frantically Googling, yep.
Yeah. What the hell is the card with him? Yeah. Yep. And this is the one that has another half card that goes with it. They're not strictly related, but they're related to me. Yavimaya Iconoclast.
Okay.
Probably another one that wasn't on your shortlist.
It sure wasn't. Yeah, I don't spend that much time looking at two mana green creatures with trample. That's not my wheelhouse. I'll leave that one to you, hey?
So Yavimaya Iconoclast is a green and one for a 3/2 creature dash elf full stop. We'll get to that. It's got kicker for one red and trample. And when it enters the battlefield, if it was kicked, it gets +1/+1 and gains haste until end of turn. So,
and it's a 3/3/2 on its own.
It's a 3/2 with trample with nothing else going on.
Hmm.
And that's already almost playable. And if you get it to be a 4/3 with haste on turn 3,
it gives me really strong Flint Hoof Boar vibes.
I think it's just better than Flint Hoof Boar, like just a straight upgrade to Flint Hoof Boar.
Cool. I think a lot of cubes are going to be tossing up between the two and probably going to settle on Iconoclast.
Yeah. Yeah. The one thing that just really annoys me is that it doesn't have why isn't this a warrior?
That's true. The artwork, which doesn't show up on the podcast, is of a warrior with some cool hair, a really cool green and red hat, and a big two-handed sword. Like, it is extending out of the artwork. It's got to be...
If you're looking at the video, the sword is extending out of the artwork and about to
hit. You dropped out a bit there. Yeah, the sword is about to hit you in the face. Yeah. It's probably a good meter and a half long, that sword. So, just an elf, not a warrior, not a soldier.
Yeah. And I did some looking previously. The last time they printed it, like 2012, and there are four of them ever printed that haven't been errated.
Four elves that don't have a creature type other than elf? Wow.
Yeah. So
that's wild.
It's Wizard's ongoing quest to make what creature type fighty type creatures have confusing, you know, between warrior, barbarian, knight, soldier, and now blank.
I could see that being frustrating.
Yeah, you know, doing it to make Millie in particular mad. What have you got next?
Okay, well, I have one that it does have a class as well as a race. It is a skeleton. I have for us here Cult Conscript. Single black mana.
Yeah, this card is cool.
2/1, enters the battlefield tapped, Skeleton Warrior. And it has 1 and a black, return Cult Conscript from your graveyard to the battlefield. Activate only if a non-skeleton creature died under your control this turn. So I guess in theory, you know, one of your humans dies and comes back as a skeleton. One of your frogs dies and comes back as a skeleton. One of your demons dies and comes back as a skeleton. But if you kill a skeleton, it's not coming back as a skeleton.
One of your zombies dies and comes back as a skeleton, and then probably also a...
Yeah, I mean, you're getting a bit confusing once you throw in the Innistrad tribes in here, but yeah, definitely.
This card, great.
Yeah, it's not super flashy. It's not format defining, changing the entire game, but it is a role player. Single mana, 2-power recursive threats have seen play in this format as long as I've been playing it. I don't know if they have before that. I guess Bloodghast would have been since Bloodghast was printed. So
this slots just really neatly into the Rakdos kind of decks.
Absolutely, yeah. The issue I think with that might be that there is some like 6 or 7. 1-mana, 2-power recursive black threats now between Gravecrawler, The one that required you to attack this turn. The one that requires you to have two cards or less in hand. Like, there's a lot of options, and that might be a black mark against it.
Yeah, look, it may well be that it might just be the, you know, the eighth worst of eight, and maybe they don't want them all, but I think they probably just want basically as many of that card as they can get their hands on.
It's just another card that makes contamination really good.
Yeah.
What's left on your list?
So my next one is Founding the Third Path.
Okay. Founding the Third Path.
I think that's what...
Yeah, it's a saga.
Yeah.
This was on my list of cards that someone else would bring up so I don't have to. As I try and get it on the screen here, and I'm having some issues with my buttons. Hello? Do the thing. Oh my goodness. Well, I'll read it out for you while I troubleshoot. It's one and a blue for a enchantment saga. It has Read Ahead, which is a new ability which lets you choose which chapter you want your saga to start on. So you can start it on chapter 1, 2, or 3. I just cannot get this up in the traditional way, so we're going to have to go into the back end here. It's got Read Ahead. Why don't you read out what the Read Aheads do if you have it on... I have it on screen now.
I do have it somewhere. Yes, here we go. So you may cast an instant or sorcery spell with mana cost 1 or 2 from your hand without paying its mana cost. Luckily, Wizards didn't just say less than... is chapter 1. Chapter 2 is target player mills 4 cards. And chapter 3 is exile target instant or sorcery from your graveyard. Copy it. You may cast the copy. So, couple of things. So, it can pay for itself on chapter 1, which is great. Chapter 2 is the kind of mediocre chapter, but even then, you're getting, you know, delve fodder and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, everyone knows in Highlander that your graveyard is in many ways just a bonus hand. And then the bottom ability is just, you know, some Snapcaster Mage variant.
Yeah. And you can start from step 3 if you want.
That's right. You can start from step 3. And the other thing you can do is have Lurrus in your deck, or probably your sideboard, in the companion zone somewhere, so that you can just cast this as often as you'd like.
Hmm.
To help you recast your cheap instants and sorceries. Or any instance and sorceries. So yeah, I know a bunch of people have been experimenting with it and it's been going well for them. I think it's an interesting, powerful card. There's a slight quirk with Read Ahead. It's not going to come up that often, but if... So let's say you want to start this on chapter 2. And something happens to change the number of counters it comes into play with.
Okay.
So your opponent controls that Vorinclex that halves the number of counters things get.
Sure, yep.
Instead of, as would happen with a traditional saga, if it would just repeat the other chapter, nothing happens.
Really?
If it doesn't come into play with the number of counters you said it was going to, nothing happens.
Huh. Okay. Sure. That's unexpected.
Yeah, I only know that because... Rihanna was looking at some cards and this came up in a conversation in one of the judge chats that, yeah, it's got that... All the Read Ahead cards have that weird slight variation on the saga rules.
Now, I wonder if this might have any implication in Storm decks because it does generate 2 Storm for the Chapter 3. You know, you could... The turn before you go off, play this, mill yourself for 4, untap, trigger it, target, say, the Yawgmoth's Will in your graveyard that you milled over, something along those lines.
Yeah, potentially.
I'm imagining a world here where there's Storm decks that don't play Underworld Breach, so maybe maybe it's a stretch, but it's possible.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I just think that it gives you a lot of options. All of the options are between okay and quite powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Snapcasters in general are definitely worth looking at.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So, yeah. Yeah.
All right.
What else have you got?
Well, all of my main list is actually done. We had a couple of little crossover cards here, so I'll dive into my honorable mentions where
excellent.
Maybe I'm going to get chastised for this only being honorable mention here. I want to talk about Sarah Paragon, if I can get this to work.
This is the card that was in my number one slot.
Okay. I can see that being a good fit for number one. Sarah Paragon being a 4-mana 3/4 flyer, 2WW. It says once during each of your turns, you may play a land from your graveyard or cast a permanent spell with mana value 3 or less from your graveyard. If you do, it gains when this permanent is put into a graveyard from the battlefield, exile it and gain 2 life. It's really good.
Yeah, it's an incredibly powerful effect. I mean, as I've said on numerous occasions before, one of the frustrating things about Lurrus is it doesn't even need the to be a good card.
Yeah. Lurrus is sweet if you could put it in your main deck for not 2 points.
Yeah. Just being able to recur cards from your graveyard is very powerful. This, thankfully, has the clause that means that you don't get to do it infinitely once they fix their slight rules issue. But it's still great. Like, you play it, you get to replay something. Every turn.
You can also play lands with it, which you can't do with Lurrus.
True, you can play lands with it. And when they go away, you get 2 life. So, you know, play this,
bonus.
Back effect, crack it, net gain a life. Incredible.
And if you're playing cards like, I don't know, Kitchen Finks, with this card, you can do some weird stuff with the triggers where you actually gain the life from it and put it into play.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But, you know, even if you didn't gain the life, being able to replay Finks and not exile it is sweet enough on its own. Finks, it's also, because it's a triggered ability, not a replacement effect, it means if you're replaying cards like Voice of Resurgence, that have big dies triggers, you're not losing those triggers.
Yeah, it's great. To answer the question from chat about what the rules issue is at the moment, it's one they keep coming up against. When you've got a card like this that gives a spell text, like exile it when it dies, the spell doesn't keep that text when it becomes a permanent. Basically.
Yeah.
Which is dumb.
They've slowly closed the gap on that. It now keeps it from some classes of abilities that give text. So, for example, in the same set, Rivers of the Claw also gives cards an ability on the stack that does keep when they hit the battlefield because it's a trigger rather than just a part of the casting it. But there's some three words or so missing from the comprehensive rules to make Sarah Paragon work the way that it should.
But if you're in a tournament, just assume that it's pretty likely that the judge is going to make you play it properly.
Yeah, they didn't put these words on the card for no reason. Like,
yeah,
you know, yeah. They're not just decorative words, and we're going to play as though those words do something, at least in any tournament that I'm in charge of.
Indeed.
Yeah.
So
what have you got?
My next one is Furin Beast Caller.
You and your green creatures.
Great. Like, maybe I'm overvaluing it, but I think this card might actually be genuine.
So someone suggested this card to me, and I told them that they were wrong and I shouldn't talk about it. But hey, you've got the floor, Vance. This is all yours.
Green Beast Caller is a green and one for a 2/2 Dryad Warrior. Whenever you cast a creature spell, put a +1/+1 counter on Gruen Beastcaller. So if it didn't have any more text, then at that point you're like, this is okay, but it's not great. It's not too hard to attack with it as a 4/4 on turn 3, which is, you know, kind of the line for definitely worth investigating. But then it goes on to say, when Quirin Beastcaller dies, distribute X +1/+1 counters among any number of target creatures you control, where X is the number of +1/+1 counters on Quirin Beastcaller. So you get to buy back any counters you put on and distribute amongst the other idiots you've played, which have pumped her up in the first place. I just think this card has, like, again, you've got to be in a moderately creature-heavy, quite aggressive deck probably to want this. Or to find some kind of combo application of repeatedly bouncing creatures to make her, you know, incredibly swole. But again, it's not difficult to get this to be Tarmogoyf-sized in the right deck.
Yeah.
You don't get it free off your opponent's cards. You're almost never going to have the weird thing that happens with Tarmogoyf sometimes where it's turn three and you're...
Yeah.
But you also do get to sometimes have games where, you know, Avarice six and then dies and you redistribute the counters. And, like, I don't know. I just think it's quite good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or has a lot of potential and is worth trying.
It also cares about all +1 counters that are on it. It doesn't just care about counters from its own ability. If you have, say, also from this set, an Ajani Sleeper Agent, say you were to use a -3 of that to put 3+1 counters on up to three target creatures, there's three counters on your Beast Caller. Do with them what you will.
Yep, absolutely. So I just think she's neat. do you have another one you want to talk about, Jimbo?
I've got one more that was on my honorable mentions. It's a card that's powerful, but I think that there's not too much to say about it. I think that people who are interested in the card already know about the card. They're already looking at the card. Talarian Terror, 6 and a blue for a 5/5 with Ward 2. And it costs 1 less for each instant sorcery in your graveyard. So,
oh, you were serious when you mentioned this card previously. Okay.
Yeah, it can be relatively easily a 2 or 3 mana 5/5 with Ward 2 on turn 3 or turn 4.
Yeah, okay. That's interesting, because there are a cycle of baddies that get cheaper for particular conditions in the set.
I spent all weekend trying to figure out what the blue one was.
Because the black one is highest power of creatures in your graveyard or something?
Highest converted mana cost.
Highest converted mana cost, yes, that's the one. Which is, you know, okay if you've got giant Delve Idiots, I guess.
Actually, I think it's number of creatures in your graveyard. There's a separate card that's power toughness equal to your highest converted mana cost.
Yes. You're right.
Yeah.
Some 4-drop.
Yeah.
4 or 5-drop. Yeah. Yeah, look, I think this card is interesting. It's definitely, if you're casting it for 2 or 3, I mean, as I've kept saying, 2 mana 5/5s are good cards.
Yes. This one doesn't have flying, so that's a plus.
And it doesn't get bigger the next time you cast a similar card.
Yeah. But it also...
Eight, trivially.
On the other hand, though, if you're talking about non-singleton formats, the second one of these is much easier to cast than the second Murktide Regent, to stop dancing around the name. You know, like, the first Murktide, easy to cast. Second one, maybe, depends how many turns have passed. Third one, you're going to have to work for it. Talarian Terror, like, you could cast 3 in a turn. It's no problem.
Are we talking about Murktide Regent? I thought we were talking about Tombstalker.
Yeah, okay.
I've got two more cards I want to mention.
Yeah, hit me.
So, Tear Asunder.
Ooh, I was thinking about this, and then I just didn't write it down. I can't tell you why. Maybe I got busy and got distracted, and I think I had to go make dinner or something.
So, Tear Asunder is 1 and a green for a instant, I want to say.
Yeah.
Why aren't I just looking at your screen? I don't know. It's a green and one for an instant with kicker a black and one. Mm-hmm. So exile target, artifact or enchantment. If the spell was kicked, exile target, non-land permanent instead. So the non-kicked version is what you want to be moderately happy to have the non-kicked version because a 4-mana removal spell is not the hotness.
Mm-hmm.
But proper dealing with an artifact or an enchantment is an okay sideboard card. Like, there are plenty of decks where I would just have this with no kicker text as a card in my sideboard.
Yeah.
And then if you can sometimes get value out of the kicker, this is going to be quite good in some matchups. It just, any non-land says, I want you to go away and stay away. Love it.
So quite often in my lifetime living in the same state as Thomas Bott, you get these games against Mud where you draw all your sideboard cards, you've got Null Rod, you've got like a Shattering Spree in hand, you're having a blast. And then they play something like a Karn.
Yeah.
And you can't Null Rod a Karn, you can't Shatter a Karn, you know. But you can tear Karn asunder, you can remove Karn that way.
That's right. You can point this at him and go, Karn.
We've come a long way since Naturalize was playable. Yeah. Hey, you know, I have played Disenchant in my time in the format, and Disenchant is no longer in the top 10, I want to say, Naturalize effects that exists.
Disenchant is, yeah. The only reason you would ever play it is because you've got like the sweet one with the Ice Age art, and even then you're probably making a mistake.
I have a Mercadian Musk's foil, but, you know, it's still no Terra Sunder.
No. And the other one I've got, partially just because the name is fun to say, Urborg...
I'm not going to be able to type this.
So,
you can search for Urborg Goyf, and by the power of Scryfall, we have the card. That's awesome. Nice.
So Urborg Lurgoyf is a green and one for a */1+* Lurgoyf.
Yep.
It's got kicker, which I'm not going to read right now.
Mm-hmm.
And its power and toughness are each equal to the number of creature cards in your graveyard and toughness equal to one more.
Yeah.
That's okay. And the kicker is for a blue and or a black, so you can pay the kicker once or twice, mill three cards, which you're not going to do very often.
It's a fine kicker. It's better than no kicker if you're, you know, late in the game, drawing off the top of your deck. But like turn three, you'd rather hold up that mana and at the very least pretend you have Fatal Push, Spell Pierce, generic blue and or black card.
So I think this is mostly going to be terrible, but I think it's interesting. And, you know, also, who doesn't like saying Urborg Lurgoyf?
It's it can also really be quite ridiculously large, you know. Tarmogoyf, your own deck is really probably going to make Tarmogoyf like a 5-6, but a deck that wants to play a second Goyf is probably playing, you know, 5 mana dorks and a bunch of aggressive 2 drops, and this could be like a 5-5 or 6-6 on like, if you kicked it, like, turn three. but, you know.
And, you know, it's the sort of card where there could easily be some obscure use for it. But I don't know. I just
Found it
fascinating. Did you have any more specific ones you wanted to discuss?
No, I think that's actually the end of my list.
We might throw it to chat. Did anyone in chat have any cards they wanted to talk about? We can talk about a couple more cards.
Let me put one on the screen while we're getting answers from the chat. It's not one that I myself have a home for right now, but Rona's Vortex is probably good somewhere. Single blue instant, return target creature or planeswalker you don't control to its owner's hand. It's got kicker for 2 and a black, so 2 black blue all up. If it was kicked, put that permanent on the bottom of its owner's library instead. So 2 blue-black, put a creature or planeswalker on the bottom of a library, or blue, bounce a creature or planeswalker.
Yeah, this is kind of like Blood Chief's Thirst, I think is the card I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
Where you've got a one mana version that does something narrow, and a four mana version that just kills something.
Yeah.
Yeah. That seems good. Like, it seems very, as you say, like the sort of card that you could easily want to play. But because bounce anything is often better than kill something that costs two or less, right? Which is the comparison you're making between the two.
Yeah.
Bounce a creature or planeswalker.
I would ask Brandon Owen from Canberra whether this fits into blue-black tempo. And I would accept that as an answer on whether this card is going to see play in the next 3 months. One in from chat. We have this black planeswalker, Liliana of the Vale. One black. It's got some words on it. I don't think it's good.
Sounds okay. There's actually two more in chat, which we can talk about. One of which I know that...
You dropped out there. Go again.
So I was going to say, there's two more in chat. One of which I know the text of, one of which could do literally anything. so Electrostatic Infantry. It's a red one.
I like
one.
This card.
It's a 1/2, I think.
Yep.
He says, after having said he knows the text of it.
Yep, 1/2.
And it's got essentially prowess, put a +1/+1 counter.
And trample.
And trample, yeah. So,
and really sick artwork.
That is very cool artwork.
it's a dwarf wizard. He's got a glowing blue eye that matches this blue gem in his gauntlet, and he's got a battle axe which is spinning lightning all over the place.
Yeah. That is cool.
It's not often you see a dwarf holding an axe and think this is a magical character, but they've represented it well.
Yeah, absolutely.
This belongs in the same sort of place as Balmor, Battle Mage Captain, and potentially Battle Wing Mystic that we discussed earlier in the video.
Yeah, I think it's a sure thing in those kind of decks.
In fact, the flavor text even mentions Balmor, Battle Mage Captain, so there you go.
It's not as good in some kinds of prowess deck because it only triggers off instants and sorceries, but then again, I think Balmor also triggers off instants and sorceries, so yeah. So Tiller Engine is another one that got brought up.
So Tiller Engine, 2-cost artifact creature construct, it's a 1/3, and it has landfall, choose one, either untap that land, or tap target non-land permanent and opponent controls. So whenever enters, you can untap that land or tap a non-land permanent.
I can see where this might draw some eyes, for sure.
I can't. Tell me more. Are we going combo with this, or are we pushing through lethal with this?
I assume you're going combo with this.
Okay. So, actually, it only triggers... It's not even landfall. It's whenever a land enters the battlefield tapped under your control.
Oh, okay. I can't... I'm not so sure I can see. It's good with, if you're somehow porting across...
Amulet of Vigor?
Amulet of Vigor.deck, but I guess it's your second Amulet of Vigor kind of...
Yeah. So that you want to play with the Ravnica lands that enter tapped and tap for two mana?
Yeah.
Okay.
So...
Maybe you could play it with some sort of Frozen Aether effect. There's a symmetrical Frozen Aether, right? There's a green enchantment that makes all lands enter tapped.
Yes.
I know that there's... A couple of times through Melbourne, there's been people messing around with Stasis. And maybe that's the place. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, as Rutherford in the chat says, it's an interesting card to look at because it's colorless, it's cheap, and it's got an essentially unique effect, which is always something that should trigger thoughts.
One more from the chat?
Yeah, one more from the chat, which was Knight of Dusk's Shadow, I think is the only other one I can mention.
Yeah, so it's one and a black. It's a 2/2 human knight. It's got menace. It says your opponents can't gain life. And it has one and a black. Knight of Dusk's Shadow gets +1/+1 until end of turn. So it's got a shade ability sort of thing. It's not once per turn. You can activate that as much as you've got the mana for.
Menace.
Yeah, it's got menace and your opponents can't gain life. That already jumps out to me. Rampaging Ferocidon still sees sideboard play in this format as here is a well-bodied creature that stops your opponent gaining life. That one, of course, a 3/3 menace for 3. He has some other text stapled onto there, but this, you know, slightly smaller, slightly cheaper, but it can get a lot bigger. Yeah.
It can get a lot bigger. It only stops your opponent gaining life, whereas Frostedon is, I'm pretty sure, symmetrical. It was before they decided that nothing could ever be unsymmetrical.
True, very much so.
Everything, yeah, had to be unsymmetrical.
So you're saying it's for the black red aggro sideboarded mirror?
Yeah, that's right.
I think this card's quite good. I looked at it when I was putting my list together. I didn't write it down, but I think it's... I wouldn't be shocked to play against it, put it that way.
And I think this one's got a white sibling.
It does, yeah. Knight of Dawn something.
Which I think is much less exciting.
Yeah, so 2 mana 2/2 first strike. If you would gain life, gain that much +1 instead.
Yeah.
And then it has the same pay 2, get +1/+1 ability.
Yeah.
So Knight of Dawn's Light.
Yeah, that's interesting again for sure. Like the Knight of Dusk, I mean. Let me have a look at my list and just see if I did have any other
So there's one more from chat that I have to read for the first time here.
Yeah?
Verak Warped Sengir. It's from the Commander decks. Legendary creature, vampire, 2/2, flying, death touch, lifelink. So it's a slightly different vampire nighthawk here. Whenever you activate an ability that isn't a mana ability, if life was paid to activate it, you may pay that much life again. If you do copy that ability, you may choose new targets for the copy. Okay, so if you activate a fetch land, paying life to activate an ability, you can pay that much life again to crack the fetch land a second time.
Yeah. Interesting.
Okay.
Importantly, it does not work with channel, because channel's just essentially got its own rules. I know what this works with.
You've been around long enough to know this card, right? I don't know if this card's ever seen tournament play. It's a bit of a weird one here. It's called Necropotence.
Oh.
Necropotence. Yeah. Or its larger cousin, Yawgmoth's Bargain, or, God forbid, Grizzlebrand. Doesn't really do much. Now that I look at this, it actually just doesn't do much, because you could just pay that cost again anyway.
Yeah.
Because it requires you to pay the cost. Nice little tangent there, dummy.
dear.
Birthing Pod.
So, yeah, Birthing Pod is another good one. Guardian of New Benalia, it's not great. It's a white and one for a 2/2. Discard card. List?
No. Yes, it does have
indestructible. It's got enlist, and whenever it enlists, you scry 2. Like, if you're building a white weenie deck, you could definitely do worse.
It's certainly fine, yeah. It's got the Adanto Vanguard-esque discard a card, give it indestructible. I think Adanto Vanguard was 4 life. There was another one in between.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a fine aggressive card. Enlist is really strangely worded. If you haven't played much of these cards and you want to play some cards with the list, make sure that you know how it works. Because it can't be a creature that's already attacking. It can't be a creature with summoning sickness. That narrows down the options a lot, you know? You can't...
And you can only do it with one buddy.
Yeah. You can't double dip on vigilance creatures, attack and enlist at the same time, you know?
Yeah. And the last one was Temporary Lockdown.
Okay.
Which, against... Like, if your opponent is playing Lurrus, as their companion, as people are wont to do. The text of this is just exile all permanents your opponent controls, and yeah, some that you control, but like, so it's exact text for people who, you know, want facts. Two white and one, so WW1 enchantment. When it enters the battlefield, exile each non-land permanent with mana value 2 or less until it goes away. So it's just O-ring all the small things.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not sold on it personally. I think it fills a weird slot where it's rare that there's enough of those permanents in play that you need this. I suppose the fact that it takes out, you know, a Pyromancer and all of the tokens, it takes out...
Yeah.
I guess it exiles as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, with something like a Pyromancer, they don't get the tokens back.
Mm-hmm.
And look, I don't think it's great. It didn't make my top seven. But I think it's... again, it's one of those cards that's relatively cheap and has an uncommon effect.
Yeah, I feel like there was something similar printed, I want to say around Zendikar 2, but don't quote me on that because I may very well be wrong.
You could well be right. Like,
if there is, I think it's less efficient than this. Being 3 mana is quite good.
Yeah. So.
Cool.
Yeah.
So that's a whole pile of cards from Dominaria United. Some that we're really excited for and some that we are slightly excited for. And some from the Commander decks as well, hey.
Dominaria United is the kind of set where, although the power level is a bit higher than I'd like, it's not... There don't seem to be any cards that are ridiculously higher than that bar.
Yeah. Like,
you know, prove me wrong, kids, but I don't think there's any Okos or Uros or Ragavans in the set.
Yeah, no, I would agree. These are all... A lot of the cards that we've talked about today are really good role players. Cards like Terra Sunder, cards like Talarian Terror, cards like Cult Conscripts, where they're not busted. They're not out here making a new deck which is designed around this card. They're just, you know, this is slightly better than the previous option.
Yeah. Also, did you notice in Terra Sunder that the thing that's tearing a thing asunder is a Spiritmonger?
There's a couple of references like that.
Yeah.
That's really cool, actually. The one that I saw the other day, someone from Wizards posted it, was Lurking... Destroy Evil is tearing apart a Lurking Evil. That's like a 24-year difference in artwork there, which is... Wow. Oh,
that's great.
Yeah.
Talk about your deep cuts.
But yeah, no, you're right that these are all just generically good, but not, you know, you're right, they're not Oko. They're not... they're not Ragavan. They're not companions.
Yeah.
There's not going to be emergency. We're going to point Nishoba Brawler. Or maybe there will be.
I can only try. So that brings us to the end of things I wanted to discuss. Oh no, there was one more thing I wanted to discuss. Because we haven't put out set reviews for the last couple of sets. Minsk and Boo, not going to read it. What a boring card. Why would you print that? Thanks, Wizards. And there's the Warhammer 40k Universe Beyond stuff.
You dropped out a bit there after you said Universes Beyond.
Look, what I was going to say was that started getting spoiled today, and just assume that there's a deleted 10-minute expletive-filled rant here. So, just not a fan of the content.
Vance is on the record, doesn't like Warhammer in his Magic the Gathering.
Yeah.
And fair enough. That's your stance to have. Some people are really high on it. Some people think it's ridiculous.
Yep. Yep.
Let us know.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks everyone for coming along. You can find the podcast at wherever you've found the podcast, if you're listening to the podcast, or wherever you find podcasts otherwise. It's all old episodes now, but Sav and I do keep talking about trying to get back on a regular schedule. It's just, I mean, those of you on the committee will know that getting Sav on any schedule is not true.
Sav's
a busy, busy man.
An adult, a professor, lots of things to do.
A martial artist.
Mm.
If you want to chat about the format more, there's a Discord, which I'll include in the show. We did have a Patreon, but it's pretty much dead, so don't worry about that. If you want to contribute to the format in some way or contribute to the podcast, come and chat with us on the Discord. Tell us you liked it. Tell other people about the format. That's the kind of thing that we're after.
Absolutely. Yeah. Just, it's been really nice seeing new faces in the Discord, just bringing in new ideas, discussing new concepts, maybe designing decks that we haven't seen before. And maybe you're the next person to bring a new deck to the forefront and have it put up results.
Yeah. So, thanks for coming along. It was really fun. Sometimes taking a break is what you need to remind yourself that you actually enjoy.
And lockdown made many things take a break, that's for sure. Even things that are digital only, you know. It wears on you in many ways, and hey, you're back for now.
Well, and part of the reason, I mean, I quit the committee for a variety of reasons, some good, some less good. But, you know, I'm over that now. But then also in the first, between April and now, I had a kidney stone. Do not recommend. Then I had COVID. Also, I mean, yeah, I don't recommend any of these things, I guess. Kidney stone, hilariously painful thing imaginable. So then COVID, and then I had shingles last month. So, you know, it's been a bit of a, been a bit of a bummer.
That is not, you're right. I wouldn't recommend that to anyone either, that whole series of events. But I'm glad to see you through it. You know, you're on the other side of it. And
feeling much better.
Onwards and upwards, as they say.
Cool.
All right. I'll see you in about 9 weeks for another one of these, hey?
Yeah, that sounds great.
Awesome. Like, well,
as long as you can get really bogged down in set reviews, but if you're just doing, you know, about 7 cards each, it's not too much work.